So we have, just a program note, we have two pre-gavel special presentations today. I want everyone to know that. And we need to get the folks outside into the hall. Can you help me get those folks in here?
Definitely.
Thanks.
Definitely.
I need that sheet I'm supposed to give to Ben Slovak.
Okay.
Are we ready, Commissioner Fish?
Oh my.
Yeah, anywhere right here. Have a seat. Right.
I don't see my name on the platter.
We can fix that.
Well, that's a goal to work towards. All right, if I could have everyone take a seat. We have two special presentations before we gavel ourselves into a consideration of the council agenda. And first off, I would welcome you to the Portland City Council Chambers. We're glad you're here, and I'd like to recognize Commissioner Nick Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. Portland is honored this week as hosts of the United States Women's National Soccer Team. And two of the brightest stars on the global stage are with us today, Megan Rapinoe and Stephanie Cox. Today, it's my honor to read a proclamation and then to welcome two former pilots, two graduates of the University of Portland who've gone on to professional soccer and to the biggest stage in the world. And I'm going to say a few words about July 10th, 2011 in a moment. So first, the proclamation. Whereas after representing the United States in the 2011 FIFA Women's World Cup, in Germany, the United States women's national team received a hero's welcome for its world-class performance on a global stage. And whereas the U.S. women are currently ranked number one in the world by FIFA, and whereas Portland is honored to welcome the United States women's national team back to the Rose City, and whereas on September 21st, today, the team will hold a practice at noon at Geldwin Field that is open to the public, to be followed on September 22nd by an evening exhibition match against the Canadian women's national team. And whereas Portland's passion for soccer at the recreation, youth, club, high school, college, and professional levels has earned us a national reputation as Soccer City USA. And whereas Portland is proud of its local connection to the U.S. women's team, which includes former University of Portland pilots Megan Rapinoe and Stephanie Cox. And whereas members of the U.S. women's team are an inspiration to young athletes across America, including the more than 10,000 youth soccer players right here in Portland, serving as role models on and off the pitch. Therefore, I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim Wednesday, September 21st, 2011, to be a day of recognition for the U.S. women's national team. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Mayor Adams, before I introduce Megan Rapinoe, I just want to make a personal observation. I asked the question at the beginning, where were you on July 10th, 2011? And for those of us who love the game of soccer, it's a day that none of us will forget. I was in Barcelona, Spain, in a hotel room, desperately trying to find a channel to watch a soccer game. And finally, miraculously, in the middle of the coverage of the Tour de France, a German TV station cut in to show the game between the United States and Brazil. That was a game that if you love soccer, you'll never forget, because for most of the game, the United States played one player down. It's hard enough to compete against Brazil with a full squad, but to play one player down for most of the game is extraordinary. But that wasn't what made the game extraordinary. The game went into two overtime periods and was still scoreless. And then in stoppage time that would never have happened had a player not feigned an injury in the box and the referee extended the game, So in stoppage time on life support, a midfielder named Megan Rapinoe cracked the ball from the left midfield position that some have called the greatest center pass they have ever seen in the women's game. As she said afterwards, she said it was I hit it as hard as I possibly could, and it may have been the best ball of my life. Abby Wambaugh said it was the best ball of the tournament. The ball streaked across the field into the box, and Abby Wambaugh headed it home to tie the game. And I was listening to announcers in another language, but they just went ballistic. I think it's the greatest moment in soccer that I've ever witnessed, and my family and I had the honor of watching it. And then, as history will record, the game went to penalty kicks, and the best goalie in the world, Hope Solo, stopped enough shots so that the U.S. won the game and went into the finals. I can't tell you how proud I was as a soccer dad and as a soccer fan, as a Portland resident, of the role played by these two young women. They played with great distinction when they were local stars, and they've now taken their game to the world platform. And they honor us today by being here to visit and accept the proclamation. So welcome to City Hall, and Megan, the microphone's yours.
Is it on? Thank you for having us, obviously. It's a tremendous honor to be honored at City Hall. Other than soccer, I don't think we have any right place probably in this building for business. But thank you for allowing us to be here. It's so wonderful to be back. I think that I can speak for both of us in saying that this is a city that holds at least part of our roots, and we definitely can call this place home. Our time here was so incredibly special. And I think before the World Cup, I always felt, playing for the national team, a little sense of disappointment in the fans that we would get at times. I think we would get fans, but not like we had at Portland. Selling out our stadium in a matter of minutes at times, and definitely on those Friday games, it was the place to be for a lot of people in Portland. But after this World Cup, I think things kind of caught fire, and it's really cool to see the rest of the country catch on to what Portland's known for. Has known for a long time. So I think that's kind of always a special thing that I'll hold with me from my time here in Portland. I think that Steph feels the same way. And just thank you so much for all the support, not just from the World Cup, but from the time our career started here. So it means the world to us that you guys wanted us here, and we really appreciate Portland as a city, the University of Portland, for all the support that you guys give us. So thank you from the bottom of both of our hearts.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much.
And I'll just echo, what Megan said, that, our experience at Portland really established a strong foundation, and I was proudly wearing my University of Portland Pilots sweatshirt on Nike campus yesterday, and people were giving me a hard time, but I was like, hey, I'm in Portland. I can wear
like a
purple.
Freshman, first day of school, put a little backpack on.
I was just giddy, proud to be back in this city, where it kind of all started for us. I'm just so proud to bring our teammates back here and just show them, what we knew playing college soccer, just the amazing fans, the Timber Crew. And so I'm just excited that, like Megan said, that the rest of the country is following suit, that they're excited and passionate just as well that Portland has been for a long time. So thank you, commissioners and the mayor, for giving us quite an honor to be here today.
Thank you. Congratulations. Mayor, I believe Garrett Smith, the coach of the Pilots, who's won a couple of national championships, and Lisa Seri, and some other coaches are here. Could you stand just so that we can acknowledge you here, Garrett and Lisa? Right. Welcome. Yeah. Welcome to. And I want to thank, in addition to these very talented women, I want to thank the national team for and their leadership for making this possible and for scheduling this game against Canada here in Portland. It's sold out, I believe, within a day, yeah. Which speaks to just the depth of feeling people have for this team. And there's a practice today at noon at Geldwin, which is open to the public, which people can go to. And to the young people that are here, I know Mark Jolin brought a couple of youngsters who are youth soccer players. I just want to remind you that part of life is overcoming adversity, and I was, I believe, present in each of the times that Megan Rapinoe suffered a career-ending injury. And twice she ruptured her ACL, and people thought it was the end of her career. And twice she came back and overcame those obstacles and got back on the pitch, and here she is among the best players in the world. So conquering adversity. So, Mayor, can we get a picture?
Yep.
I think we have a couple gifts for you guys before we take a photo. Yes.
Here's a proclamation for each of you.
That's our gift. And then if you could stand here, we'll get pictures. And your proclamations.
Okay. Oh. That's a special one for Nick since his passion for soccer runs so deep. So that's a jersey for you.
Thank you. Wow.
That looks like your size as well.
I think I may be optimistic, Nick, but if I start working out, maybe in a little bit. You look thinner on TV.
Yeah.
Wow.
And this
thank
one
you very
much. Wow.
Right,
so
that is fabulous. Thank you. Why don't we get our fans to come up and be a
come on, ladies.
Come on,
girls.
We won't make you say anything. You can bring that up, too. All right.
You don't want to get a shot? All right.
You open it up. There's protocols here. There you go.
There you go.
Yeah, wow. You'll never have to pay a sales tax with those. All right. Thanks again. Thanks very much.
Thank you. I just wanted to add a comment because, Megan, you mentioned that maybe you don't have a place here in City Hall. First of all, everybody has a place here in City Hall. Second, Commissioner Leonard's not here. I like that.
You snooze, you lose.
I think you do for many reasons. One, sports is really big business here in Portland, and soccer has greatly added to our economy, and that you're part of that. Second, the joy of sports is something that we can all share together. I bought my 2000... Go Pilots! Because there's few things that a 25-year-old son and a 23-year-old son and a 21-year-old daughter all want to do with their mom and watching soccer and yelling as loud as we can. So I'm sorry that we didn't quite reach you in terms of our volume for the World Cup, but we will yell louder in front of the TV next time. Thank you for all you do for a community in Portland.
And a big underscore thanks to the University of Portland and Nike and everyone else who's so supportive of the team. Thank you. All right, if I could have, for our next presentation, we've got four seats up here. If I could have Jim Cook, president of the Local National Association of Letter Carriers, Kevin Card, president of the Oregon State Association of Letter Carriers, John Steubenval, Oregon Food Bank, and Chris Lopez, Northeast Coalition of Neighbors, come forward for our next presentation. In my hands is a letter signed by every member of the City Council outlining Portlanders' concerns as we view them about pending proposed changes to the United States Postal Service, and we are concerned. We know what it's like to run public agencies and face tough times. And we know that just like City of Portland is constantly seeking to improve, so is everyone who is a stakeholder in the Postal Service. But we are very concerned. And today's presentation allows us to highlight that concern, including the fact that the post office has a misguided practice of hiring transitional employees for 51 weeks per year. That just leaves 1 week shy of full-time permanent employment. But they don't get the same level of benefits and jobs protection. And we have reduced service delivery being contemplated from 6 to 5 days. And right now in the City of Portland, as we will hear from those that are going to testify in a minute, we have a significant number of routes that are having to be staffed in a manner that really doesn't provide the kind of service that a city needs. This issue is of concern to a city of our size, but having grown up in a smaller city such as I've grown up in a small city in Oregon, and Newport, Oregon. It's a concern to us. It can be a significant blow to us, but it can be a devastating blow to small cities across the United States and across the nation if post offices start disappearing from our neighborhoods or other cities. So we're really glad that you're here to put a spotlight on this issue. And who would like to go first? Please.
Thank you, Mayor. Good morning, Mayor Adams and the City Commissioners. It's an honor to be here on behalf of the National Association of Letter Carriers, Branch 82. We represent about 1,200 letter carriers, city letter carriers in the greater Portland area. And I express on behalf of all of these letter carriers and throughout the country our deep gratitude for the Portland City Council's unanimous letter expressing support of the long-term viability of the United States Postal Service. We continue our effort locally to save America's Postal Service, representing the interests of the workers as well as the communities we serve 6 days a week. As you know, there are solutions to this current postal crisis. And one such solution is simple H.R. 1351, co-sponsored by Congressman Blumenauer, and we're up to 210 other co-sponsors on Capitol Hill, and it's growing daily in a bipartisan manner. We are busy getting the facts out to the neighborhood associations and other civic organizations that will allow us to speak. We have some letters of support from the neighborhood associations and signed petitions talking about the main issues, Mayor, you just addressed. And we have, this is just the beginning, and we've mailed them, priority mail, to the Postmaster General and the Board of Governors and our elected representatives. We thank you for taking the time today during this extremely busy schedule to help us save America's Postal Service. With this letter, Portland has proven again to be a leader on the issues that matter to communities here and throughout our nation. Thanks also to Chris Lopez, President of the Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods, and John Steubenvall from Oregon Food Bank for expressing their support today. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Commissioners, for your support and really solidarity with our postal families here in Portland. We join you in that support at Northeast Coalition. On May 17, 2011, our Board of Directors passed unanimous resolution in support of H.R. 1351, and 8 of our 12 member neighborhood associations received presentations from U.S. postal carriers, and all 8 also passed similar resolutions. The services that that our friends at the U.S. Postal Service provide are immeasurable, things that do not show up on paper. When I first moved to Portland 13 years ago, our letter carrier, Jeff, pretty much showed us how to own a house, you know, how to own a home, how to take care of things, things to look out for. Of course, took care of our things when we went on vacation. It's just checking in on elderly neighbors. I mean, the things that they do are just invaluable, and it's, I'm very, very glad that that we're all in solidarity in trying to keep service intact, really. And thank you once again.
Thank you, sir. Hi.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. I'm John Steubenvall, the Director of Advocacy at Oregon Food Bank. We're here today also to express our support for our friends, the letter carriers. And very briefly, for more than 20 years, Oregon Food Bank has had a very strong partnership with Branch 82 of the Letter Carriers Association. And that partnership speaks to one way the letter carriers are part of the community. The most important single food drive of the year at Oregon Food Bank is a Saturday event every year, the Letter Carriers Food Drive. This last year alone, that food drive in Portland and throughout Oregon brought in almost 1.5 million pounds of food for Oregon Food Bank to help feed hungry Oregonians, our single largest food drive of the year. We believe we will solve hunger in this state, and we will do it through partnerships. One of the foundational partnerships that we have at Oregon Food Bank is with the letter carriers. So obviously, when we hear things about cutbacks in Saturday service, other changes to the postal service, we're very concerned, not only for the letter carriers and the jobs that those provide, but also for the community benefits that all the time aren't fully seen by all of citizens, like the annual Saturday food drive that we have with the Letter Carriers Association. So we thank you today, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, for all of your signatures on that letter to the Postmaster General, and we encourage you to continue to be in support of the letter carriers on this issue.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Mayor, thank you, and thank you, Commissioners. And I provided you a packet. We're having a rally today to save America's Postal Service at noon at Pioneer Courthouse Square, also on September 27th, 4 o'clock at the main post office. So, again, this packet provides more information. Thank you for the valuable time.
You betcha. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it. We will now move to our regular agenda. Today is Wednesday, September 21st, 2011. It's 9:30 a.m., and the City Council will come to order. Sue, can you please call the roll?
Saltzman.
Here.
Leonard. Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Adams.
Here. Quorum is present, and we shall proceed. Before we proceed, though, I've received a request from Commissioner Randy Leonard to allow his participation in Council today via electronic communication for agenda items 982, 983, 984, and 986. The Commissioner has stated that failure to allow full participation of Council members on these items would jeopardize the public interest, health, and safety. Unless there are objections, we will connect Commissioner Leonard via electronic communications for these Council agenda items. Hearing none, we shall proceed, beginning with communications. Can you please read the title for item number 977?
Request of Thomas Edward Mullen to address Council regarding no justification for wrongful incarceration.
Welcome, Mr. Mullen.
Thank you.
You just need to give us your first and last name, and that clock in front of you will help you count down 3 minutes.
Yes, my name is Thomas Edward Mullen. Thank you. Yes, I'm here to address the council why I haven't been justified for wrongful incarceration with injuries that resulted of actions of Multnomah County while I was incarcerated and back in 1994, extending from a crime that happened in 1989. The courts took too much time in getting me to court, and then once they injured me, they also refused to go back to the laws of giving me my workers' comp thing, saying that they I had to file after I got out. This is not true because under the grandfather's clause, they must go back to the statutes of 1989 of 10/31/1989, and at that time, then they was my total keepers and total responsibility of me, and my claim is still good, and they are still responsible for me every day now until they file a claim that's accurate and make it reacted back to the day that they injured me and paid me for all my losses that I have lost because the state and the county was liable at that time, but now the state is in it too because the state was supposed to tell the county to file such papers, but they defrauded my case, and I went through the whole system all the way up to the 8th Supreme Court, and the 8th Supreme Court told me to exhaust all of my avenues that I can here before they would take on a case. And so now I'm coming before the City Council to ask them at this time for a special funding like they gave Caleb, the boy that's was lost, that's missing. They gave they found $150,000 for this guy to just look for a missing guy. Now here they done killed me, as the records shows they're here, that I'm injured, my back is injured, I can't work, I can't lift over 20 pounds or nothing, and these people are still denied. They don't deny that they injured me, but they denied to pay me. So, and in America, if you can't work, you might as well be dead. So, and so then now 7 years later, I was eligible to get my work Social Security, so, and that's called extortion. Because they're making me draw my Social Security due because I didn't injure myself. They injured me. So, therefore, I was supposed to draw my Social Security when I got ready or retired. So, therefore, that's extortion on the county and the state of Oregon at this point in time. And but as I look back and I've been going fighting this thing here, I understand that I'm not alone. As papers here that shows that it was over 77,000 people that got injured on the job and back in 1980. And then there was, in 1994, there was over 1,001,021,000 billion people annually that got injured on the job. So this is the abyss that they had thrown me in. I fight my way back up to the top, and every time I get to the top, they tell me that I can't speak because I don't have an attorney. But
so Mr. Mullen, your time is up, and the issues that you raise are issues, I think, best addressed with Multnomah County, not the city of Portland.
Once again, I'll go back to, as the 8th Supreme Court said, that I must have expunged all my avenues and remedies that I possibly can. But at this point in time, that the city council, if they can't remedy it, they should have passed it on to the federal courts of the United States to remedy this, because it does go across their borders and everybody else's borders. It might be out of their jurisdiction, but it's not out of their referral jurisdiction referral this case.
Using your 3 minutes today, you have come before the city council, and unless one of our attorneys says otherwise, you've exhausted this opportunity, and so you can tell the court that you have. But I don't, based on what you said, I don't see that we have any actual jurisdiction in this matter. I do appreciate you bringing it to our attention, and I encourage you to bring it to the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners' attention. They have jurisdiction. They have more jurisdiction over some of the issues you raised. So thank you for your time today. I appreciate it.
Yes, let's say one more thing. At this time, I would like to also say that I feel that it's President Obama said that
Mr.
this
Mullen,
is a day of rage, and so I feel that.
We have other people that have signed up.
Thank
I appreciate you,
you
coming to see us.
All right, thank you.
Can you please read the title for communications item number 978?
Request of Orlando Cardenas to address council to promote homecoming festivities at Roosevelt High School.
Hi, welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Go Rough Riders.
Yeah. I'd like to talk about homecoming for Roosevelt High School. This is a big week for us. This is a week where we like to engage in our community, celebrate a lot of things together, making sure that every Roosevelt High School student is engaged in their community, involved in separate activities. This Thursday, we're having an alumni banquet at Airport Embassy Suites, where all alumni who used to attend Roosevelt are attending, well, some of them at least. And And on Friday, we have a homecoming parade starting at and ending at Roosevelt High School. The parade will wind through the St. John's Business District, and it will be great for the students to see our community out and support their efforts. Also, we will have a Roosevelt High School Alumni Association Board of Directors meeting at 2:30. It's just for them, especially. And we also have a vintage auto show at the Roosevelt High School field. That'll be nice to celebrate. See all flashy cars and stuff like that. And also we'll be having a barbecue and a bonfire at 5, provided by South Lake Church Bonfire, who is sponsored by Daryl Grant's class of 1994. And I'd like to say that Roosevelt High School is actually on the rise, as many people have heard. It is on the rise. I've been there for 4 years. This is my last year as a senior and as the president, student body president of Roosevelt High School, so that is a big accomplishment for myself and the rest of my peers. I think Roosevelt has actually changed the 4 years that I have been there, especially now that I am president. I think that Roosevelt isn't who it used to be. You know, all that gangbanging stuff that they said Roosevelt was, all the you know, stuff like that, it's just, it hurts. It hurts me, especially since I'm the president, you know, and it's something that I would like to change. It's something that I have as a goal in life. Now, my last year here at Roosevelt High School is to change the way the community, especially everybody in Portland, is change the way that people see Roosevelt High School, because we're not who they think we are. We're above that, everybody, and I speak for the rest of my peers, everybody back at Roosevelt High School, from the principal to the janitors. And I would like to welcome you guys to the Roosevelt High School homecoming on Friday to see the game, football. We're also planning to break the record of attendance at the football game from last year's. So hopefully we get all of the alumni involved, all the community, as much people as we can get to celebrate the Roosevelt Rough Rider Pride that we have, because we are on the rise.
You are definitely, and Mr. President, I'm really grateful that you came here to tell us about homecoming and definitely speak the truth about all the great improvements at Roosevelt.
Well, thank you for having me, Mr. Mayor and Commissioners. Thank you.
We now have, we probably could have the next three come up together, I think. Can you please read the title for communications items number 979, 980, and 981?
979, request of Judith Marley to address council regarding tremendous support from the St. John's community for Roosevelt High School. Number 980, request of Andre McCowan to address council regarding stereotypes of minority students at Roosevelt High School. And number 981, request of Natasha Yeggins to address council regarding Community 101 at Roosevelt High School.
So Treasurer Marley.
Hello. My name is Judith Marley. I'm the class treasurer at Roosevelt. I'm here to talk about really the college-going nature of Roosevelt. I went on a college tour last spring at Roosevelt High School, and a group of students were chosen to go on this trip. And, you know, the journey there, we had, you know, fun bonding times. We got to, you know, get to know each other a little bit more. We didn't really know each other going into because there's a lot of students at Roosevelt. So I met a lot of people that I didn't know. But on the trip, we learned so much about college. We learned through we did presentations every day. We learned stuff at colleges. We had to interview students at the colleges we attended in Georgia and Alabama. And we were held to a higher standard than we are at Roosevelt. You know, we have a dress code at Roosevelt, but we don't have to, we don't like wear uniforms. But at this trip, we, you know, were required to wear slacks and collared shirts and dress professionally and appropriately to be around college students, and we were just held to a higher standard. And as we got back, we got stuck on our college trip. We ended up missing our flight, but it showed, you know, how everyone works together and how we all can come together as a community and work together. And then now that we're back, you know, we're trying to show students that college is an option for everyone. It doesn't matter who you are, what your grade point average is, you know, what is in the past that, you know, now we're starting to change our futures and become students who can go to college and graduate and become the powerful leaders in our community. And, you know, after this, you know, in high school, peer pressure is a really big thing. You know, everyone wants to follow what their friends are doing. And after this college tour, we're showing students that we can all go to college because now we're hyped up for college and that we want to go, and it's showing our friends that we can go. So we're just changing Roosevelt to be a college-going, you know, community, college-going school, which wasn't what people think about us before. So I just wanted to tell you guys that, and thank
That's
you for
fantastic.
Your time.
Fantastic. Good work. Mr. McCowan.
Hi, my name is Andre McCowan. I'm a junior in Power Academy at Roosevelt, and I'm going to be talking to the mayor and the council about stereotyping minorities at Roosevelt. Like, as being like half African American, like some people don't expect me to excel academically in the classroom and stuff like that, you know. But I'm here to like I showed them that like I can achieve things and achieve my goals, like going to college and getting a higher education and representing as a young man to my peers and to like my family and stuff. That so like to have a better life and things like that. So, and like oftentimes you hear like about Roosevelt being like a bad place for the community and stuff like that, but it's really not. Like I'm trying to like help Roosevelt become like a better place and like represent so everybody can perish together and have a safe learning environment, you know, like that, not act as a role model to incoming freshmen and people that are already there that are like contributing to the community and stuff like that and to the school.
Well, thank you, Mr. McCown. Well said. Really appreciate it. Ms. Yeggins.
Hi, I'm Natasha Yeggins, and I come to talk to you guys about how our community 101 last year. And I'm also representing Roosevelt as a student body government vice president. And last year, we did the Community 101 for the first time as a leadership group. And we had $5,000 that we sectioned off to nonprofit organizations. And the three nonprofit organizations is the Children's Relief, Northwest Pilot Project, and we also did Janus Youth Program. And we went off our mission statement to see if their mission statement matched ours to see who we're going to give it to. We had a lot of different ones, but those are the top three that came up that met our mission statement the best. And we split them up equally. We gave Children's Relief $250. We gave Northwest Pilot Project $150 and Janus Youth Program $1,000. And this year we're going to try to do that again, and we're going to try to do different organizations so everyone gets a chance. And with the Community 101, we're basically trying to say that we're not only getting money for people think that we just got that $7 million just for us. No, we also give away to our community. As we get, we give away also. So it's not just like we're asking for that money, but we're giving away to our community to share the support that we had got this year.
Well said, and I want to thank again Mr. President and the great leadership advisor, Mac McPherson, and each of you for being here today. Roosevelt really is on the rise, and you being here today helps get the words up. You wanted to say?
Yeah, thank you so much for taking time to come to City Hall today, and welcome to your City Hall. I want to commend you for your work and your diligence in academics as well as in sportsmanship. I will be there at the homecoming game on Friday. I'm looking forward to that. I think the statistics show that Roosevelt is there, that 86% of your seniors graduated last year. That's tremendous. And $4 million in college scholarships with over 150 kids going on to college from Roosevelt. Those are actual results that show that your hard work and that of the teachers, the principal, the community coming together is making a huge difference. So thank you for coming down to tell us about it.
Give them all a round of applause. And you're welcome to stay and watch democracy happen. You're also welcome to leave. We won't be offended.
Actually, no.
You got to go back to school, don't you?
All right.
Thank you. You'll be on that list, I'm sure.
That's right.
Couple of years.
Keep going.
Couple of years, you'll
Thank
be on
you.
That list.
Thank you guys for having
Thank
us.
You.
You bet. Thanks again. Really appreciate it. All right, we'll now consider the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull any items off the consent agenda?
We had a citizen request 992 be pulled.
Okay, 992 is pulled and will be heard at the end of the morning council session. Please call the vote.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard. Adams?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Consent agenda is approved. We're going to hear items. If you could please read the title for 982, 983, 984. Those three.
Okay. And right now I'm going to connect Commissioner Leonard.
Please.
Commissioner Leonard, do you hear us?
Commissioner Leonard?
What do I need to do with the phone? I can hear him.
Oh, okay. All right. We should be connected. Let me read the items and we'll straighten out our technical difficulties here. Commit to 982, commit to pursue a mutually agreeable partnership with the Oregon University System and Portland State University for constructing the Oregon Sustainability Center, direct the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, the Portland Development Commission, and the Office of Management and Finance to finalize construction, design, and commit to building the Oregon Sustainability Center. 983, authorize an intergovernmental agreement with the Portland Development Commission for the land disposition and development of the Oregon Sustainability Center with the South Park Block's urban renewal area. And 984, authorize an intergovernmental agreement with the Oregon University System to jointly share the costs to obtain design development and 50% construction documents for the Oregon Sustainability Center within the South Park Block's urban renewal area.
Thank you. I'd like to ask Willie Smith, representing Congressman Earl Blumenauer, and Lynn Peterson, representing Governor John Kitzhaber, to please come forward. We know you're extremely busy, so we're going to get you right up first. Let's see if we can get Commissioner Leonard to pipe through the PA system. Commissioner Leonard?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. We're just beginning with presentations from Congressman Earl Blumenauer and Governor John Kitzhaber. Mr. Smith.
And I'm watching you on.
Good.
Kind of scary. My name's Willie Smith. I'm Congressman Earl Blumenauer's district director. And on behalf of the congressman, I'd like to read a quick letter to you that he wrote. Dear Mayor Adams and Portland City Commissioners, I'm writing to express my support for the Oregon Sustainability Center, an important project that will create significant economic opportunities for Oregonians. The OSC represents national and international leadership in a new era of advanced building design. Its model of innovation and collaborations between public entities, the private sector, and higher education provides opportunities for business not only in Portland, but in places like Salem, Bend, and Joseph. The OSC will also speed the development of Oregon's green building industries, including sustainable wood products, building materials, manufacturing, alternative energy design and implementation, efficient building management and maintenance, and small business opportunities to provide supplies and support for high-efficiency facilities. It will bring architects, planners, developers, energy efficiency experts, business professionals, and new visitors to the region, enhancing Oregon's reputation for creating green and sustainable solutions through innovation and collaboration. In addition, the decision of two federal agencies to invest in the OSC demonstrates the federal government's confidence that this project will help create a long-lasting private sector opportunities. We commend the City of Portland, the Portland Development Commission, and the Oregon University System for your close collaboration on this important project and look forward to highlighting the Oregon Sustainability Center as one more example of Oregon's leadership in creating new jobs for a sustainable future. Sincerely, Earl Blumenauer, Member of Congress.
Please express my thanks to him and thanks to you, Mr. Smith.
We will.
Ms. Peterson.
Good morning, Mayor and City Council. My name is Lynn Peterson, and I'm the Sustainable Communities and Transportation Advisor to Governor Kitzhaber. I'm here on behalf of the Governor today to express his support for the Oregon Sustainability Center. The Governor believes that an economy of innovation is within our reach. A low-carbon economy that leads the way in advanced manufacturing and designing products that use less energy, one that rewards efficiency rather than excess. It's also an economy that values the local, Oregon companies supplying Oregon companies. It means that communities across the state capture their local value streams, their energy savings, wind, sun, forest, and drive their economies from keeping that value at home instead of sending out into the world economy for imported energy and making our state economy more resilient. The Oregon Sustainability Center is a beacon of these important values. It is Oregon-centered, put together by a local team using local products. More importantly, it shows that in the West, we are committed to creating jobs and economic activity without sacrificing long-term environmental stewardship, that the clean economy offers us perhaps the only path to a sustainable future that is insulated from the chilling effect of fluctuating fossil fuel cost and supply. Oregon is already a clean economy leader. The sector employs 59,000 people in Oregon and boasts the second highest concentration of these jobs in the nation. This project will help to solidify that leadership. Oregon and the Oregon University System have already substantially invested in this project precisely because of the importance to our state. Our universities are the wellspring of innovation, research, and productivity, which is key to our ability to realize a prosperous economic future. And this project presents a great opportunity to commercialize and deploy much of their cutting-edge work. With its commitment to local, there is no doubt that this project will boost our economy and create good family wage jobs here in Portland and well beyond. It will also be an important symbol of what the city and the state stands for while setting an example for the rest of the nation. That is why the governor supports it and has asked me to come here today on his behalf. I hope you will join him in supporting this valuable project. We will be providing written testimony from the governor after this meeting.
Well, I want to thank you both for your advocacy to the federal government and the fact that I think other speakers will go into detail, but we received word just in the last couple of days that U.S. Department of Commerce, the Economic Development Administration, awarded us a grant for this project of $1.5 million for a specific system and the innovation in a specific system within the building, and that wouldn't have happened without your advocacy and the advocacy of the federal government in general. So thank you very much.
Great partnership. Thank you.
Next, we'll hear a presentation, an overview from Susan Anderson of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, Jeff Baer from the Office of Management and Finance, and Lou Bowers from the Portland Development Commission. Welcome back. Ms. Anderson.
Good morning, Mayor. Council. Susan Anderson, Director of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. With me here today are Jeff Baer with the Office of Management and Finance and Lou Bowers with the PDC. I will provide an overview. Jeff will talk about financial issues and ownership structure, and Lou will talk about some of the building specifics and job creation benefits. So this morning, while you think you may be talking about a building, we're talking about really our future and really the future of the planet. Let me start with some facts. Currently, there are 3.5 billion people living in cities. Most of those cities were built over the past 200 years and now have aging infrastructure systems, transportation, sewer, water, power, housing, and other systems. Over the next 20 years, world populations are expected to grow and shift and become increasingly urban. And so while now we have 3.5 billion people living in cities, in just 20 years, we are expected to have 5 billion people living in urban areas by 2030. That's a 40% increase in population for cities worldwide, and that is a monumental shift, and that's what's coming. It means we can't just be a little bit greener. We need to take it to a whole new level. We need to rethink cities from the ground up. The world will need super efficient buildings, new forms of energy, and innovative compact living that still preserves a high quality of life. And Portland is in a tremendous place to capitalize on this new demand. We have a strong presence, as was mentioned, in the clean economy, selling sustainable technologies, products, and services. We have a well-earned reputation as the greenest city in America, and that reputation has paid off. It's paid off locally with lower energy bills and transportation costs for our residents and our businesses. It's paid off with thousands of creative, talented, well-educated people who have chosen to move to Portland, and it's paid off with jobs. A great example of this is the announcement yesterday by Interface and Green Building Services that they have been hired to lead the lead sustainability consultants on a huge project, 110 buildings in the Middle East. Portland is seen as a green business leader. And though we may be in first place now, there are dozens of cities who are nipping at our heels. And the Oregon Sustainability Center is a beacon for the new economy. It presents a tremendous collaborative for business, for the university system, for nonprofits like Oregon Environmental Council, Earth Advantage, and for private business partners like Sanyo and Intel, Umpqua, Cisco, and many small businesses within the community. But the center is really much more than just a symbol. It will be a working laboratory and a catalyst for innovation in the regional economy. It will be an R&D center, not just for technologies, but also for systems and for human behavior. For example, Intel will test its wireless sensor networks and servers on how to control energy costs. Sanyo will introduce new high-efficiency photovoltaic panels to the U.S. market and has agreed to manufacture those solar cells here in Oregon when the project moves forward. The center will advance our leadership as an urban center of excellence and innovation, and it will create demand for Oregon clean technologies, products, and services. But unlike many other leading-edge buildings that are being built, green buildings in America, the Sustainability Center is designed not to be just one of a kind, but to be the first of its kind. It's being designed to be copied. We want to be the place where people can understand this is an infill project. It's not just a project off in a field somewhere and a one-off kind of thing. It's something that we want others to copy and to learn from, and so that we can sell from there. Large firms like Intel and Sanyo are a part of the project, but it's not just about big companies. It's also about providing opportunities, skills, and jobs for minorities and for women contractors through what we have as a construction equity agreement. And that's really important. That sets us apart. A lot of cities talk about sustainability, but what they mean is environmental sustainability. What we're doing is walking our talk on equity and social sustainability. And finally, the center will serve as a platform for commercialization and export of Oregon products and services. You know, I think it was a decade ago, Commissioner Saltzman brought to council a request that my office, the Office of Sustainable Development at that time, be allowed to move into the EcoTrust Natural Capital Center. And as the anchor tenant there, we really helped to launch the success of that building. And at that time, rents were a little bit higher in the beginning, but the rest of the market caught up over time, and now there is a virtual waiting list of companies to get into that building. I wish we had had an equity, you know, stand in that building. Being in the EcoTrust building helped me to raise millions of dollars in outside funding for sustainability projects. Sure, we have good programs in Portland, and we had good projects and good ideas. But often it was the building and the co-location and being with other nonprofits, with entrepreneurs, and with local government, sort of the whole EcoTrust experience was what sort of tipped it so that different foundations and different funders were interested in us in the first place. So the next step for the Sustainability Center is to develop the 50% construction documents. Lou will talk about that a bit more. Today, we're asking for your approval to move forward with a contingent commitment to co-own the Sustainability Center. Tomorrow, OUS will provide an update to the Ways and Means Committee and seek acknowledgement of their intent to continue with the design and construction drawings and to share costs 50-50 with the city. And on October 12th, PDC will consider a similar commitment. Again, the Oregon Sustainability Center is not it's not just a building. It's a collaborative business venture, and that will help Portland's future as an economic leader in clean technology. Before I turn it over to Jeff and Lou, I just wanted to really acknowledge the great partnership that we've had with the Oregon University System. Jay Kenton, who is the OUS Vice Chancellor for Finance and Administration, Jim Francisconi, member of the Oregon State Board of Higher Education, and OUS Chancellor George Bernsteiner. Thank you.
Do we have the technology figured out? We do? Okay. So who will go next? Mr. Baer?
We yes. can go to slides if you want. Yeah.
I think we're going to be on slide 6. Technical difficulties.
An opportunity to genuflect.
That's it.
Aha.
Looks like we're going to be good to go.
Thank you, Sue.
Good morning, Mayor Adams, member of City Council. I'm Jeff Baer with the Office of Management and Finance, and I'm going to walk through a couple of the project details related to the sources and costs associated with the project. And on this slide, it illustrates a very complicated mix of funding sources and a variety of different partners involved in this project. You'll see the cost estimated at this point is $61,700,000, which includes the construction costs, financing costs, and the value of the land that PDC is donating in towards the project. The funding sources itself, you'll see, is a mix mostly comprised of the Oregon University System with their bonding and funding sources, city bonds of $8.3 million, which would purchase a condominium share of the building equal to about, I think it's 26% of the building. And then a variety of other funding sources. The mayor indicated the EDA grant that we just received and a variety of other sources. This project equates to approximately about $434 per square foot minus the land value. And this is not that unusual in comparison with the, and I'll compare the Port of Portland's recent administrative building at the airport, which was approximately 205,000 square feet at a cost of $415 a square foot. So it's just kind of give you a comparative of additional cost. And in that particular building, it met the LEED Platinum, which is the highest level. And this is going to the next level, which is the Living Building Challenge, which is actually a net zero facility. On the next slide, we talk about and illustrate the ownership structure in a more definitive way that shows that the city is going to occupy approximately 33,000 square feet, which equates to one floor in the seven-story building. And then the middle section, which illustrates the Oregon University System, 41,000, and the Oregon Best Research Center, which is 3,600 square feet. And then the bottom segment is the what we call the joint shared risk space between the city and OUS, which I'll get into and talk a little bit more in detail in the next slide, but that really comprises the retail space, the nonprofit tenant space, the for-profit tenant space, and also the conference center. Some of the investment that the city would be making towards this project includes some one-time cost, and the one caveat I want to make in regard to this is that these are low-confidence estimates, and we express them in ranges just to give you an idea of what some of the cost we anticipate
investing in this project, especially with moving the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability into this building. And there are still a lot of unknowns at this point and won't know until we get further along the design, and especially once we get into the 50% construction design phase. But this illustrates some of the ongoing cost, one-time cost and ongoing cost relative to the project investment.
Why would there need to be more furniture and fixtures and equipment? Why wouldn't we just move the furniture from the current place?
And that's one of the things that we don't know yet, is that until we hire a space planner to look at what the existing furniture is within the 1900 building, whether or not that would be an approved item for being in the sustainability center. For example, I think the daylighting strategy calls for a 42-inch partition wall, and I believe most of the furniture in the 1900 building is at 54 inches. So we're just not sure if that would fit. But that would potentially reduce the cost if we were able to bring that over with them.
To the lower end of the $1.8 million?
Yes.
I do want to just say also that when we did the estimates with what was then General Services, when we moved into the EcoTrust building, the estimates were about $200,000, and we did it for $43,000 because we had donated materials, and this could happen too. So although I totally appreciate and we worked very closely with Jeff to come up with that low-end number, I do believe it could be lower.
And some of the technology-related costs are with the ERNI, the Integrated Regional Network Connection, to bring in fiber to the building. I just said so they are connected onto the city's main network.
If I could just follow up on that. So if we go to the high end of the furniture, fixtures, and equipment, I presume that means we're getting everything new and leaving what's there in the
correct
1900 building. Why does the moving cost, therefore, go up? I mean, I would assume there's less to move. There's nothing to move except bodies.
We're just expressing it in a range just to give us some contingency factor dependent on that.
Is it?
I know it's a small number, but it just seems counterintuitive. Okay.
You're being safe than sorry in terms of being conservative on potential costs.
Right.
And they don't necessarily match up. The move cost would be higher if there's less of new furniture, because they'd be moving more of the old furniture.
That's why they need to hire a space planner. Yeah.
Correct. On the city risk share exposure, we wanted to illustrate how that there are some inherent risk in this project, especially going forward. And because we've taken a position that we are going to split equally the cost with the Oregon University system, that there are some additional costs associated with this risk shared space and partnering on it. For example, the conference center, which equals about 3,600 square feet, that is a factor we built into the rent projection for planning and sustainability, for the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability on that. And so we just want to show, again, expressing these in ranges on low to high, some of the potential ongoing costs associated with the project itself.
Jeff, on the potential cost slide, does that assume a 10, 20, or 30-year timeline?
On a 30-year timeline.
So the worst-case scenario, according to this slide, is we could have a $300,000 risk in terms of what we're picking up in the space that we don't actually own for 30 years.
Correct. And we actually have, I believe it's two tenants at this point, and Lou might talk about this, that have agreed to or tentatively agreed to 30-year lease terms. And so we're trying to offset that ongoing risk with some longer-term lease tenants.
And just by way of comparison, you know, when the city builds parking garages, when we build the 1900 building, we made assumptions about the retail spaces in those buildings as well. And when they're not filled, we pick up the cost. So this is being very explicit and well we should, in terms of what are the ranges for if everything does not go the way we want, if some of what we assume does not go the way we want, and then if everything goes exactly as planned.
And we do have a different financing structure in this building. The city is intending to take out a 20-year bond, and so our debt service would be paid off within 20 years versus the Oregon University system, which they're intending to do a 30-year bond debt service on that. So there is going to be a sort of a 10-year gap when that planning and sustainability would have a reduced rent because their debt service would be paid off in 20 years.
Thank you. You can
move this slide. With that, I'll turn it over to Lou Bowers.
Lou Bowers from Portland Development Commission. Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. First, I send greetings from Patrick Quinton, who would like to be here, but he's on a generating job leads in China at this point. Got a tweet from him the other day, so he's working hard. I'm going to expand a little bit on some of the points Susan made